This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And good morning, everybody. Hope everybody's having a good Saturday here as we get into the weekend, a weekend where hopefully we'll get good weather and all that good stuff. Lots of stuff going on in sports. NBA, of course, continuing with their series, and we'll keep you up to date on all those different things. But let's get started with some headlines. So the Mariners get a victory last night, had to come from behind. They were down 4-0, got five runs in the seventh inning, and get a 5-4 victory over Detroit. So that evens the series at one apiece. Tonight, of course, it's going to be at Safeco Field. James Paxton going in, trying to get his third win of the season, and Tigers with a 20-24 record. Of course, there's still some issues to worry about with the team, but at least they got the victory last night, a very big victory because it was much needed as far as that goes. Looks like Johnny Manziel is going to go to the CFL. Smart move on his part because he really doesn't have much of a choice. I think. I mean, it's one where all right, you tried this off season, you tried to get back in the league, nobody was really interested, and so now what are you going to do next? So he is going to go and play in the CFL. Not a lot of news in the National Football League. A few more signs. Looks like Odell Beckham Jr. is going to attend the OTAs, and of course OTAs for the Seahawks open up this week. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday will be an open session for the media on Thursday. Chance to see the team. So that'll be on the agenda. Of course, Cavaliers playing tonight down 0-2 against the Boston Celtics. Vegas gets the win, so now they're one win away from getting into the Stanley Cup Final, which, of course, that's been such a great story for an expansion team. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Mr. Clayton, how we doing? A fine, cloudy Saturday morning, my
friend. It is cloudy, yes.
Yeah, it's a little cloudy out, but hey, let's talk a little bit about that football.
Yeah.
Now, there's a big topic. They voted this week on some of those changes.
They haven't voted on anything yet. That's going to be coming up this week.
Yeah, okay. They're going to vote on those changes, some of those changes that they're going to propose for the special teams on the kickoff.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see them wanting to just get rid of the kickoff?
Yes. I think it's almost, this is a last-ditch effort to save the kickoffs, but I think they really do want to get rid of it.
And the rationale behind it is because, I know they talk about some of the players coming down, coming down there, getting down there fast, collisions and all that, what have you. What do you think of that? You think they should
get rid of it? I think you're taking too much away from the game. I think that some of the things that they're going to do this week can be okay because it could lead to maybe some more returns that could be of exciting nature because what they're having, no running start for the coverage teams. And, of course, Now you have eight guys that are going to be 15 yards away from the coverage team and three guys back. So one of your three guys can go and maybe break some kind of a big play, and if that's the case, boom, you can have an exciting situation. But it's still one where it's they're really leaning, and what their positioning is that they have their stats say that there's five times more concussions on kickoffs than there are any other play in football, and so that's the big concern that they have.
Wow. I mean, and I understand that. I can understand the collisions that you have when you give a guy a running start. I mean, some of these guys can get 40 yards within a certain amount of time, and when they collide, it can be they took away the wedge,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
They took away that part of it, and they also allowed that if it goes in the end zone, he doesn't have to touch it, right?
Right.
Yeah, as far as that's concerned. I just hope they don't take it away totally because, I think the kickoff is a very intricate part of the game.
Agreed.
You know? Yeah, you got your onside kicks. You know, you can pin somebody back. And some people were proposing to start them at the 35-yard line or something like that.
No, 25.
The 25, they're going to leave it right there?
Mm-hmm. That's what I think they're going to end up doing. It'll just end up just having the play start from the 25-yard line. But, see, that takes away so much. It devalues your kicker to a certain degree. Now you can't take some of your best young players on kickoff returns and have them out there trying to get some experience, trying to make tackles and try to advance their careers because now you're taking away all those special teams. I think those are the things I worry about, along with the fact it's an exciting play. I mean, Tyler Lockett's one of the best return guys in football. Are you going to take away his kickoff returns?
I know. That's the thing that gets me about Tyler Lockett. You got a lot of other young guys out there. Cordell Patterson is another guy that's very exciting in kickoffs. I think they're over legislating this game a little too much.
Yeah, I agree. And that's the thing that you look at. It's like, I don't question where they are as far as the numbers on concussions, but also understand you're going to have higher numbers because there's more attention to it and more guys that are going to be at least determined to have some concussions, or at least a question of concussions, because the stats are going to be a little skewed because you are doing a little bit more.
I know. I know. And Mr. Clayton, I look at this this way. The faster, the bigger, and the stronger the athlete is, you're going to be more prone to having these collisions and having concussions and what have you. I don't think you can take it totally out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to
You can try to minimize it, but you're not going to eliminate it. Simple as that.
Yeah, and that's a fact. Now, Let's go back. Any other things that they're gonna be voting on?
Well, again,
the running back.
They're gonna vote on they've already implemented having the lower the head penalty, right? And so lowering the head, but now what they want to do is they want to expand replay so that they can look at those plays and see if there's going to be any ejections.
Yeah. Now that also they brought up about that ejection thing. They're gonna allow them to get a replay to see if they do have to eject the player. Why? That is almost like the college model that they're using, right?
Right.
They're gonna try to use that. Do you think, unless there's a malicious intent to hurt that person, sometimes you look at sometimes in the college game, the guy coming in just to try to blow up a receiver or something like that, what have you, separate him from the football. And they eject that guy. I think sometimes I just don't like that. I don't like that call.
Right.
Of ejecting. Because, all right, say for instance, you got one of your top-notch safeties out there, and he's getting ready to make a play to blow up a play, and he happens to. It's hard to project where that receiver is going to land or how the timing of hitting a receiver or anybody.
Right.
Even a running back. Now, running backs, what are they going to do as far as that situation with Lauren in the head?
Well, I think they're going to give okay on that. They're going to try to minimize that. They're going to not have quarterbacks as they try to score at the goal line. They'll try to minimize what they can do with guys that are on the offensive line. So that's what they say, but I still think there's enough vagueness that is still going to cause problems.
Mr. Clayton, you're looking at your power backs like the Marshawn Lynch's and some of, Leonard Fournette, those guys. I mean, they lower their pad shoulders, their shoulders, and they get down low, and they tell them the low man wins. I mean, what are you going to do to that situation when you get ready to call that play?
Right.
Make that call. I mean, I think another thing, too, they're confusing the refs more than anything out there with all these penalties and, keep implementing more and more rules.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, because it's putting him in a position where he's almost legislating the game. Yeah, and I don't think he wants to be put in that position that he's the end all be all to call the game like that. I mean, I like the way the Super Bowl went, where they took back some of the calls and allowed them to actually play.
Right.
Now, is that going to slow the game down? Keep implementing more and more rules?
That's what I worry about. I mean, the more you change it, because again, these changes, because you make the changes and there's kind of a vagueness to it, there gets more confusion. I mean, look how many years it took on the catch rule, and you still don't know if it's still going to be okay. They kept on trying to add words to the action, and that just made things more confusing.
It definitely does. When it comes to the catch rule, you actually don't even know what a catch is or what a catch is not. I mean, the guy has to literally just lay on the ground with the ball for at least a minute and a half before you can say it was a catch. I don't know, Mr. Clayton. I don't know. Is that rules committee
I think it's more because again, the competition committee serves the league, and so it's Troy Vincent, it's the officials, and they're the ones, you know, particularly the supervisor official, Al Riveron, and they're trying to, and again, you have Jeff Miller, who is the guy who does all the concussion studies and all that, kind of leading that. So you put all that together, and it just becomes problematic.
It does. I mean, it's definitely becoming problematic. And I understood as soon as I had a feeling that would happen soon as that court ruling came down for those concussions, and also came down where they had to put that money into that fund to help out with concussion research and all that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand that you're trying to protect your interests as far as your profit is concerned, but I think also you're lessening your product out there on the field. You're going to take away from the product that you're providing, you know, because you're starting to see it, Mr. Clayton. I mean, I'll tell you one case in point. I think one of the problems is less practice.
Yeah, agreed.
Now, that less practicing for players doesn't get them more in football shape, and it doesn't allow them to practice more, own their crafts more, to maybe decrease some of the injury that you see out there. Does that make sense?
Does it make sense, yeah.
I mean, I just don't understand that philosophy of, because if I can't practice or own my craft, I won't be as viable to my craft.
Correct.
Yeah, so I'm just looking at it. Let's talk some football, Mr. Clayton. We can talk about this all day.
Right.
Let's talk about some football. Let's go to the, let's start with, take each comp, each division. The AFC East.
Bill Belichick, there's no competition. It's New England.
It's New England.
Yeah, you can make the argument. Now, maybe the Jets are advancing, but Miami and Buffalo are going a little bit backwards this year.
Yes, they are, because Buffalo, you don't know who's going to be the quarterback, the starting quarterback for the Buffalo Bills. But I'm intrigued with Buffalo's defense, Mr. Clay. I think Sean McDermott, I looked at him last year. His inability to stop the run was real paramount. It killed his team. Teams could run the ball at him. But this year they got Star Utility on the D line.
Right.
They drafted, it was pretty good as far as that was concerned. Do you see any improvement on their defensive side of the ball?
I see some, yeah. But they still have gotten to read a lot of big names, and it's nice that their defense can be better. But are they going to be better at quarterback? With AJ McCarron and Josh Allen compared to Tyrod Taylor, and I say they take a step back. They're thin at the wide receiver position.
Yes. Yeah, they are. They're thin at that. Shady McCoy is going to be more. It's going to be more dependent on this year than anything, especially with a young quarterback. And the problem is with Shady McCoy, though. He's starting to suffer those little knick-knack injuries that could be susceptible to him having.
He's 29, going on 30.
Down the line.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with you there. The Miami Dolphins, you don't like anything about the Miami Dolphins right now?
When you take steps back like they did, tell me how you get better when you take two of your best players on your team, Ndamukong Suh and Jarvis Landry. How do you get better when you let those guys go?
You got a point, Mr. Clayton. I can't answer that one. I don't know how you get better on that side. On both sides of the ball, you took away two staples on both sides of the ball, that's going to be very hard to replace. The Jets, I was intrigued by the Jets. I thought Todd Bowles did an admirable job of coaching that team last year because nobody projected them to do what they were going to do last year.
No, agreed.
I know they're coming in with a young quarterback and all that, but I really like that they kept the McCown around. He could possibly help out and start the year off pretty decently. So you said the Jets is the only one you think that could compete with the...
No, nobody can compete with the Patriots. Nobody's close enough.
No, that's true.
It's been that way for 17 years, pretty much.
That's true.
tell me what's different.
That's a long time. that's embarrassing. But you know what?
JB, got to run.
All right, Mr. Clayton, next Saturday.
All right, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710. ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
Let's hit the phones at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Tara in Mercer Island. Tara, how are you?
I'm good. Disappointing week with the Robinson Cano suspension, but other than that, pretty good. How are you?
Doing well. Yeah, right. It's been a tough week for the Mariners. I mean, they had to really struggle. First, I think that road trip turned out to be tougher than they expected. Then you find out about Robinson Cano. Nelson Cruz gets the hit, misses a couple games. He's still aching. And then, you've got Mike Zunino batting 193. They really have limited answers right now, at least success as far as filling that number three hole, particularly when you have Cruz out, and then the bullpen has been very shaky.
Yeah, but I will say this about Robbie. My various sources say that he's a great guy, and also you can tell that with the impact he's had on Gene Segura and Diaz when the hurricane came in. I forget where he's, Puerto Rico, having stay with him in the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, I mean, that is the one thing, but boy, it's the 80-game suspension, and now the doubts that it puts in your mind about him, because, Mike Teixeira, I don't know if you saw that, went on TV and was saying that he wasn't surprised because he always kind of suspected there may be that kind of a problem with his ex-teammate.
Yeah. What are your top three storylines coming into the Seahawks training camp?
We repeat that again, the top three storylines? Establishing the running game, trying to see how much better they can be running the football. The blocking with Mike Solari on the offensive line, that's going to be huge. And then trying to take some of the players, Trey Flowers and others, that are going to try to be incorporated into this team that are going to get more playing time. Shaquem Griffin trying to come over, and Shaquille Griffin, both those guys, how they fit in. So there's a lot of storylines to go. And of course, you're waiting to see about Earl Thomas. Is Earl Thomas going to show up at some point?
I don't think Earl Thomas will. Maybe he will more in the mini camp, when I think he really wants a contract done. Mm-hmm. And the Seahawks, John Schneider and Pete Carroll, are very strong on even though it's his last year in contract, but he's not asking the right way for it. Like, I don't think they should give it to him if he acts like, oh, I'm going to hold out.
Right. No, I would agree with that. I mean, because first you have to see, and you can see there's a kind of a check between the players and Pete Carroll. Are you in or are you out? And he had the feeling that Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman weren't completely in, and so they're no longer on the team, because I guess you get tired of the speeches and tired of the different stuff, and, it kind of, the relationship kind of wears down, and I think that ended up happening. And so now you make the adjustments to see, where he is, and is Earl Thomas all in, or is he all out? Because if he's not, he won't be on the team.
Yeah, and you touched, based on this a little bit, this week about some of the some guys giving us a bad grade in the off season, but I don't really think that they know, because Mel Kiper gave us an F in the draft when we got Bobby Wagner and Russell, and look how they turned out. They're like the most elite middle linebacker and elite quarterback.
Right. No, I agree with that. It's like, because, it's like, okay, so they don't hit the conventional players that will go to most teams, but that's why you can see the success, because I remember it was like a D grade in 2011, and four really good players came out of that, including Richard Sherman and that. So it's like, it's one thing to be critical, but again, and watching him in practice, you can see where the fits are.
Yeah. And I think our defensive line is good. I think that's the most underrated, because Michael Bennett left Cliff Avril, but Frank Clark can step up, and Jaron Reed and Mazzell Jones also.
Yeah, I mean, what I like, though, is that, I think they're thin for pass rushers. I think they could still use more there. But they overall, I think that they're going to be better with the running game, because I don't know if you can get too much worse. I think Mike Solari will make it better for the offensive line. We'll see how good it can be. And then the pass rush, I mean, that's still think that could be an issue.
Yeah, I see Rashad Penny maybe starting in the fifth week because I think that they need to commit to one person. They can't just commit to Chris Carson and keep flipping back and forth. Mm-hmm. That doesn't really work that good.
No, but that's going to be a challenge. I mean, there's no question. I do like what I see of Rashard Penny. I think he looks really good. And I think that they still want to try to have a little bit of a rotation, but at least by adding a first-round running back who does look good, you know, there's better options right now for this team.
Thank you for taking my call.
Tara, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. We'll come back, and Doug Farrar from Bleacher Report will be joining us next. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Joining us now is Doug Farrar from Bleacher Report, and of course, owners meeting coming up on Tuesday, Wednesday. And what's your thoughts on the rule changes that they have proposed right now for kickoffs with the no running start, three guys back to return, eight guys, no two-man wedge? Do you like it or don't like it?
Well, I think... the data shows clearly that the returns are the most dangerous play in football. The first thing I'm in favor of is they're actually talking, you know, Goodell and his people are actually talking to the coaches this time, as opposed to making reactionary unilateral rule changes and then saying, okay, coaches, you just deal with it. They're actually bringing in the people who have to scheme this stuff up and asking their opinion. So I think that will be better. My fervent hope is that they're not going to eliminate returns altogether, because I think at that point you get to in a situation where you're drastically altering sort of the bottom third of every roster. Guys who've been on the bubble will tell you over and over and over, and I know you've heard this too, player X says, I would not have made it in the NFL were it not for my work on special teams. And I think if that goes away, or if it's dramatically affected, it's going to change the game maybe a lot more than the powers that be may have anticipated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, I'm fearful. I just get the vibe going to these meetings that they really do want to eliminate the kickoffs, which I think would be a major mistake. The one thing I do find intriguing about the proposed rule change coming up is that, you can now maybe, with three guys back and eight guys at the 15 and no running start, and pretty much you're going to have faster guys. I mean, you're no offensive linemen, defensive linemen on the special teams, or at least on the coverage teams and all that, and you don't need them as far as blockers. At least there may be a little bit more room for some returns.
True. It also does make it faster. As you said, it puts smaller guys on smaller guys out there. I don't know how that limits injury.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
That's the thing. I mean, you still have people running at each other at a high rate of speed trying to inhibit their movement, and I think as long as that happens, you know, the potential for injury is there. You know, it's going to take 2 or 3 years, you know, before we have repeatable data where the NFL can say, okay, based on our findings, it's now, you know, the injuries have reduced on returns. If there isn't a reduction in injury or it actually goes up, I think that's where they talk about eliminating returns altogether. Mm-hmm. So I think that, in my mind, it's like a 2 to 3 year process where they can look at the data. I think in the end, the NFL wants to eliminate the return and can't just, you know, they can't just have a blanket dismissal of the entire, you know, a third of the game without talking to the union, which they're not really doing right now, and a lot of other stuff.
Mm-hmm. But that's my fear, because, you know, they just the 2 to 3 year idea is great. And I agree. That's the way they should do it. I don't think they're on a 2-3 year basis. I think it's this year. And let's say, for example, if concussions drop to 4% more than other plays, they'll eliminate the kickoff, which I still think is bad.
You mean Roger Goodell might make a decision based on limited data and his own reactionary thinking?
I know. Wouldn't that be surprising?
That's a shocker.
I know. I mean, it's a stunning move there. So, yeah, it's amazing.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. Who would go figure? You would just not figure that.
Who'd have thunk it?
I know, exactly. Yeah, I think it's going to be tough. And then, I don't know, I'm still confused over the helmet rule change, you know, lowering the helmet, because it just seems to me to be too vague, as vague as the catch rule.
I think it's even more vague because, I mean, the catch rule is, it's specious and it's arbitrary and it's impossible to officiate because there are so many steps. Targeting rule, as we've seen in college, of course, we're affected by the fact that we watch a lot of Pac-12 refs and nothing's good.
Mm-hmm.
But there's absolutely no way to determine intent. There's no way to determine at the point of attack whether, because we see this all the time. I mean, a running back lowers his body to get lower to give himself more leverage, and the defender who innocently had his helmet in a place where it's, you know, attached to his neck, all of a sudden is in the firing line, and it's not his fault. It's like a batter moving into a pitched ball. It doesn't really make sense. The targeting rule, I mean, I believe most people who cover the NCAA really stringently have kind of viewed the targeting rule as a joke. So why it's going to the NFL, you know, I'm a little bit relieved that Jeff Triplett has retired, so we don't need to see Triplett try and officiate that.
Mm-hmm.
But there are enough sketchy, you know, there's a lot of sketchy quality of officiating in the NFL, and the more options you give them to mess up, the more they're going to mess up.
I agree. That's going to be kind of the scary thing, but it should be an interesting meeting. One of the conversations this week, I know on NFL Live, Dan Graziano brought up the idea that the Seahawks have had the worst offseason of any team in football, which you can certainly make an argument for that. Where do you chime in on that?
Well, you and I have discussed this before. It's funny. I'm watching the NFL Top 100 on NFL Network, and Richard Sherman just came up. Oops. Good timing. I think if you look at it as, is this a franchise that still believes they're in their first Super Bowl window? It looks like a complete and total disaster.
Yeah.
And in that point of reference, there's no question that it would be. You know, Pete Carroll and John Schneider said at the Combine, and have said since, it's not a rebuild, it's a retool. That was Schneider's words. It's very clearly they're taking this down to the studs. They are changing their offensive and defensive coordinators. They're moving out most of their major guys on both sides of the ball. I think the defense will stay the same. The offensive line, Mike Solari is about as different from Tom Cable as you can have two offensive line coaches be. I mean, Solari has some zone concepts, but he's power counter trap. This is going to be great for you, but John, it's going to be like the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1973. You're going to see the old Mike Webster trap play.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very different thing. They bring in Rashad Penny. They bring in all these different guys. And what they're looking at is, this is sort of Pete Carroll's second Seahawks recruiting class. And I've talked to him about this before. I asked him about this at the Combine. You know, your experience in college where you have to turn over an entire roster every 2 or 3 years, how did that inform the way you do it in the NFL? And he said that from his time with the Jets and the Patriots in the 90s, it made him a lot more flexible with the concept and the idea of, we have to turn this whole thing around. We have to drop it to the studs and rebuild quickly. So I understand the idea of, yes, this is a disaster. You know, there's something I think they let Michael Bennett bail too early. You know, there are some things you can question, but this is a team that needs to rebuild, and I think if you're going to rebuild, it's better to do it this way than in half measures over time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because the way I look at it, I'm not taking them down to 6 wins, as some people may want to do, because they have a quarterback and they're a better team with better players than they were in 2011 in that Pete Carroll's second year. So I kind of consider them, you know, they're not a Super Bowl team, but I look at them as a team that can still make a wild card.
Well, I think the division is more dangerous. I'm a big Josh Rosen believer. I think the Niners are on their way up. The Rams look very much, I mean, the dream team stuff is always, you know, weird, but I think they have enough homegrown talent and they've added to it. That looks to me like a Super Bowl contender. If the Rosen thing works out, you could argue Seattle will be competing with Arizona for least talented team in that division just based on, you know, 1-53. I think the MVP is going to be Mike Solari. I would argue that Tom Cable's blocking schemes and evaluative talent probably cost that team, I would say, 1-3 games in each of the last couple of years. If Solari can turn that around, if he can, you know, make DJ Fluker a starting quality player, if he can, you know, get Ethan Pokic to block with more power, if he can make Jermaine Ifedi presentable, you know, that because that's sort of the basis of the Brian Schottenheimer game plan and certainly the Pete Carroll game plan, is that balanced offense overall. You can't have a balanced offense without an effective offensive line, and that's sort of been the schism this team has been in for the last couple of years. So, you know, are they an 8-win team? I think if things bounce their way, maybe, but I don't, you know, this really isn't about, and it's always, you know, the Mariners have been in this situation for the last 20 years. Do you admit that you're rebuilding and just rip off the Band-Aid, or do you worry too much about selling tickets and you drip, drip, drip over a few years? And I think what the Seahawks are doing is what they should be doing. Their talent got old. They had a couple of bad drafts. They made some really bad free agency signings. They took a couple of years to figure out what Jimmy Graham could do, and then they got him to do it, and now he's gone. So this is, you know, the rebuild from start to finish is exactly what should happen. And I don't think in that point, you know, to that degree, 2018 is not really a crucial year for this team, except, I mean, to me, it's going to be like 2011, mm-hmm. where it's, you know, the second year of Carroll and Schneider just rotating players and seeing who could fit, and you could start to see the pieces come together. I think if it's like that, and 2 years from now they're a Super Bowl team, as was the case from 2011 to 2013, then they're on the right track, and we'll just see how that goes. I will say one thing. The fact that they're doing it without Scott McLuhan this time is going to be a real object lesson regarding who was really wearing the personnel pants the first time around.
Mm-hmm. Scott was really good. It was a good part of this. No question.
Yep.
No question
about
it.
He's the best personnel guy in the league, and they really benefited from him, and they'll say so. And now he's in Cleveland, and, you know, they still have an estimable staff, but I think Scott was kind of a force multiplier there. The other thing is, and this is why Bill Belichick talks to Brett Bielema and Urban Meyer and all those college guys, because he wants to keep his eye on college trends and the way things are going. The other difference in this rebuild is that Pete Carroll doesn't have the benefit of having recruited the guys who are coming up in the draft. He doesn't have the eye on a Richard Sherman maybe the way he did before when he tried to recruit Richard out of high school in L.A. So it's a bit of a different landscape, and we'll just see how it goes.
What do you see as far as other teams that have taken drops?
Other teams that have taken drops. You know, I mean, if you have some in mind that you'd like to discuss, it's hard for me to say because, you know, we look at things that happen and they don't always happen the way we'd expect.
Right.
Like, who do you think has taken a drop?
I mean, you can almost make an argument for Buffalo and Miami. Jets, I think, advanced. I think they've gotten better. But, I mean, how do you get better in Miami when you get rid of two of your best players, Jarvis Landry and Ndamukong Suh? And, you know, Buffalo, are they technically going to be good, better at quarterback with A.J. McCarron and, you know, Josh Allen? I mean, in the long term, I think they'll be better. But I think that, you know, Tyrod Taylor was one they probably should not have let go.
Well, the thing about Tyrod, I mean, Rick Dennison, that whole staff, I can't remember in the last 10 years an offensive staff that was not on the same page with quarterback more than the Bills were not with Taylor. So they bring in McCarron, who to me is a major talent drop, and Josh Allen, who I wouldn't even give a first-round grade, and I think at best he's 2 to 3 years away from being a passable NFL quarterback, if that's ever going to happen. I mean, of the two Joshes, the fact that Allen got taken before Rosen is amazing to me, because Rosen is by far the most pro-ready quarterback in this draft class.
Mm-hmm.
With the Bills, you also have to look at, they've lost, what, 3/5 of their offensive line? They're still trying to figure that out.
Right.
So, yeah, that would be a team that, I mean, and the shame of it is for Buffalo, especially with Tremaine Edmonds, who I wrote about him last week as, I think, if they use him right, he's a shoo-in for Defensive Rookie of the Year. Their defense is going to be tremendous. Their run game is going to be pretty good. But, yeah, that quarterback thing is kind of weird at this point.
I agree with that. It's like, it's just so crazy to do that. Now, with the OTAs coming up here, what things are you looking forward to seeing over at the Seahawks?
I really want to see Trey Flowers. That's an interesting thing. Safety at Texas. Lasted until the 5th round because he was kind of a tweener guy. But the more I watched his tape, the more I was really intrigued and excited by a couple things. He's got long speed. He's got, you know, good strides. He just eats up a lot of ground. And he, when Pete Carroll said, we're looking to convert him to cornerback, I thought, okay, now it makes sense, because he fits the profile perfectly. Very tall guy. Very aggressive, really good in space. I think Shaquin Griffin is the obvious. How are they going to use him? And, you know, the inspirational story. I think Flowers is maybe the guy I'm most looking forward to seeing. You know, how does that conversion go? Can he work? Because Pete has very specific teaching techniques for cornerbacks. And he will not put a guy on the field until that guy has adhered to every part of his just schematic and technical and mechanical philosophy. So Flowers hits the field a lot in the first season. I'm not saying that could be Richard Sherman the second, but it's kind of a similar story. The other thing, you know, does Ken Norton have any schematic changes in mind? The whole thing about letting Chris Richard go, I don't think the defensive regressions were Chris Richard's fault. And I think Norton may be more of an inspirational guy than a schematic guy. So are they just going to go, you know, base cover one, cover three, and do that? And obviously, what happens with the offensive line with Solari as a teacher, as an evaluator, you know, how does that work? Because this team will never get back to where they were without drastic improvement along the offensive line. And that's, you could argue that if that happens, Solari is the team's MVP.
No, I think Solari was a great, great hire. And I think that, I mean, as bad as it was last year, in the last couple of years for Jermaine Ifedi, I think that he's a guy that may show the most improvement with Solari.
Well, you'd have to hope so. A lot of false starts, a lot of just timing things, a lot of lunging, a lot of weird bucket steps where he doesn't align his strength. And this is consistent with his college tape. You give most pressures of any draftable tackle in his draft class. So he's always been a raw project. And the thing that Tom Cable always purported was, I'm the guy who could take the raw players and turn them into rock stars. And it never really, I mean, Justin Britt, you could argue, but Britt had to change positions twice before that worked. And he turned out to be a natural center. Now, if Solari can do that, if he can take the talent on hand and turn it into something good, and that's obviously what Carroll and Schneider are banking on, because they didn't go out and make a whole bunch of moves for new offensive linemen. You know, they're kind of admitting, okay, the guy we had was not good enough to do this. We believe in the guy we now have. If that's the case, then they've unearthed a lot of intrinsic value in their linemen they didn't have before. That's a major step forward for them.
So what do you have on Bleacher Report this week?
Taking a bit of a break right now, but we'll be back next week with some interesting things about unheralded players and accurate passers and all sorts of good stuff.
Okay, well, that sounds great. Then you'll be going on Thursday to practice?
Possibly. Could mm-hmm. be there.
Okay, of course, that's on Bleacher Report. It's Doug Farrar. Doug, thank you as always.
Thank you.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. The, of course, again, the OTAs. And well, I'm just pleased to see how quickly the draft choices are signing. Seahawks got eight of theirs done, but league-wide, there's only like about 72 players that have not got their deals done yet. And that's about as good of a pace as you're going to find. And, of course, there's still plenty of time for those guys to get their deals done. And been a pretty good portion of the first-rounders that got their deals complete. So the negotiations, I think, have been pretty good. That's encouraging. It will be interesting going to the owners' meeting this week to see, you know, all the things that are going on. New owner for the Carolina Panthers. That, of course, will be talked about a lot. You know about the rule changes and what's going on there. That'll be talked about a lot. So it's a pretty good agenda that's going to be coming up. Of course, we'll be there starting on flying there on Monday, and then we'll be there at the owners' meeting on Tuesday and Wednesday, coming back on Wednesday. So pretty good trip that'll be coming up. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. The idea is the kickoffs are going to be a big topic. Safety is going to be a big topic. You know, the idea as far as what's going to be happening as far as the national anthem and what they want the players to be able to do there, that'll be on the agenda. So a lot of things that we'll be talking about there and keeping you up to date on. All right, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.